stone, and you could see broad shapes and outlines, but you could not make out details. The riders were strung out, and they were laughing and talking amongst themselves. I counted them. Six. Six armed men against two. They exercised no caution at all, and my thought was, Rooster's plan is working fine. But when they were about 50 yards from the dugout, they stopped. The fire inside the dugout had gone down, but there was still a little string of smoke coming from the mud chimney. Rooster whispered to me, Do you see your man? I said, I cannot see their faces. He said, That little one without the hat is Ned Pepper. He has lost his hat. He's riding foremost.
What are they doing?
Looking about. Keep your head down.
Lucky Ned Pepper appeared to be wearing white trousers, but I learned later that these were sheepskin chaps. One of the bandits made a sound like a turkey gobbling. He waited and gobbled again, and then another time. But of course there was no reply from the vacant dugout. Two of the bandits then rode up to the dugout and dismounted. One of them called out several times for Quincy. Rooster said, That's Hayes. The two men then entered the cabin with their arms ready. In a minute or so, they came out and searched around outside. The man Hayes called out repeatedly for Quincy, and once he hooped like a man calling hogs. Then he called back to the bandits who had remained mounted, saying, The horses are here. It looks like Moon and Quincy have stepped out.
Stepped out where?
Inquired the bandit chieftain, Lucky Ned Pepper.
I can make nothing from the sign, said the man Hayes. There are six horses in there. There is a pot of softy in the fireplace, but the fire is down. It beats me. Maybe they're out tracking game in the snow.
Lucky Ned Pepper said,
Quincy would not leave a warm fire to go track a rabbit at night. That's no answer at all.
Hayes said,
The snow was all stirred up out here in front. Come and see what you make of it, Ned.
The man that was with Hayes said,
What difference does it make? Let us change horses and get on out of here. We can get something to eat at Ma's place.
Lucky Ned Pepper said,
Let me think a minute.
The man that was with Hayes said,
We are wasting time that is better spent riding. We have lost enough time in this snow and left a broad track as well.
When the man spoke the second time, Rooster identified him as a Mexican gambler from Fort Worth, Texas, who called himself the original Greaser Bob. He did not talk the Mexican language, though I suppose he knew it. I looked hard at the mounted bandits, but mere effort was not enough to pierce the shadows and make out faces. Nor could I tell much from their physical attitudes, as they were wearing heavy coats and big hats, and their horses were ever milling about. I did not recognize Papa's horse, Judy. Lucky Ned Pepper pulled one of his revolvers and fired it rapidly, three times in the air. The noise rumbled in the hollow, and there followed an expectant silence. In a moment there came a loud report from the opposite ridge, and Lucky Ned Pepper's horse was felled as though from a poleaxe. Then more shots from the ridge, and the bandits were seized with panic and confusion. It was LeBeef over there, firing his heavy rifle as fast as he could load it. Rooster cursed and rose to his feet and commenced firing and pumping his Winchester repeating rifle. He shot Hayes and the original Greaser before they could mount their horses. Hayes was killed where he stood. The hot cartridge cases from Rooster's rifle fell on my hand, and I jerked it away. When he turned to direct his fire on the other bandits, the original Greaser, who was only wounded, got to his feet and caught his horse and rode out behind the others. He was clinging to the far side of his horse, with one leg thrown over for support. If you had not followed the entire stunt from start to finish, as I had done, you would have thought the horse was riderless. That is how he escaped Rooster's attention. I was mesmerized and proved to be of no help. Now, I will back up and tell of the others. Lucky Ned Pepper was bowled over with his horse, but he quickly crawled from under the dead beast and cut his saddle wallets free with a knife.
The other three bandits had already spurred their horses away from the deadly cockpit, as I may call it, and they were firing their rifles and revolvers at Lebeef on the run. Rooster and I were behind them, and a good deal farther away from them than Lebeef. As far as I know, not a shot was fired at us. Lucky Ned Pepper shouted after the riders and pursued them on foot in a zigzag manner. He carried the saddle wallets over one arm and a revolver in the other hand. Rooster could not hit him. The bandit was well named Lucky, and his luck was not through running yet. In all the booming and smoke and confusion, one of his men chanced to hear his cries, and he wheeled his horse about and made a dash back to pick up his boss. Just as the man reached Lucky Ned Pepper and leaned over to extend a hand to help him aboard, he was knocked clean from the saddle by a well-placed shot from Lebeef's powerful rifle. Lucky Ned Pepper expertly swung aboard in the man's place, without so much as a word or a parting glance at the fallen friend who had dared to come back and save him. He rode low, and the trick-riding Mexican gambler followed him out, and they were gone. The scrap did not last as long as it has taken me to describe it. Rooster told me to get the horses. He ran down the hill on foot. The bandits had left two of their number behind, and we had forced the others to continue their flight on jaded ponies, but I thought we had little reason to congratulate ourselves. The bandits in the snow were dead men and could tell no tales. We had not identified Cheney among those who escaped. Was he with them? Were we really on his trail? Also, we found that Lucky Ned Pepper had made off with the greater part of the loot from the train robbery. The thing might have fallen out more to our advantage had Lebeef not started the fight prematurely, but I cannot be sure. I think Lucky Ned Pepper had no intention of entering that dugout, or indeed of approaching it any closer, when he discovered the two stock thieves unaccountably missing. So, our plan had miscarried in any case. Rooster was disposed to place all the blame on Lebeef. When I reached the bottom of the hill with the horses, he was cursing the Texan to his face. I am certain the two must have come to blows if Lebeef had not been distracted from a painful wound. A ball had struck his rifle stock, and splinters of wood and lead had torn the soft flesh of his upper arm. He said he had not been able to see well from his position and was moving to a better place when he heard the three signal shots fired by Lucky Ned Pepper. He thought the fight was joined, and he stood up from a crouch and threw a quick shot down at the man he had rightly sized up as the bandit chieftain. Rooster called it a likely story and charged that Lebeef had fallen asleep and had started shooting from panic when the signal shots awakened him. I thought it was in Lebeef's favor that his first shot had struck and killed Lucky Ned Pepper's horse. If he had been shooting from panic, would he have come so near to hitting the bandit chieftain with his first shot? On the other hand, he claimed to be an experienced officer and rifleman, and if he had been alert and had taken a deliberate shot, would he not have hit his mark? Only Lebeef knew the truth of the matter. I grew impatient with their wrangling over the point. I think Rooster was angry because the play had been taken away from him, and because Lucky Ned Pepper had beaten him once again. The two officers made no move to give pursuit to the robber band, and I suggested that we had better make such a move. Rooster said he knew where they were going to Earth, and he did not wish to risk riding into an ambush along the way. Lebeef made the point that our horses were fresh and theirs jaded. He said we could track them easily and overtake them in short order. But Rooster wanted to take the stolen horses and the dead bandits down to McAllister's and establish a prior claim to any reward the MK&T Railroad might offer. Scores of marshals and railroad detectives and informers would soon be in on the game, said he. Lebeef was rubbing snow on the torn places of his arm to check the bleeding. He took off his neckcloth for use as a bandage, but he could not manage it with one hand, and I helped him. Rooster watched me minister to the Texan's arm, and he said, "That's nothing to do with you.
Go inside and make some coffee,
I said. This will not take long,
he said. Let it go and make the coffee.
I said, why are you being so silly? He walked away, and I finished binding up the arm. I heated up the sofki and picked the trash from it and boiled some coffee in the fireplace. Labeef joined Rooster in the stock cave, and they strung the 6 horses together with halters and a long manila rope and lashed the 4 dead bodies across their backs like sacks of corn. The dun horse belonging to Moon bolted and bared his teeth and would not permit his dead master to be placed on his back. A less sensitive horse was found to serve. Rooster could not identify the man who had returned to rescue Lucky Ned Pepper. I say man. He was really only a boy, not much older than I. His mouth was open, and I could not bear to look at him. The man Hayes was old, with a sallow, wrinkled face. They had a hard time breaking the revolver free from his death grip. The 2 officers found Hayes's horse in the woods nearby. He was not injured. Right behind the saddle, the horse was carrying 2 toe sacks, and in these sacks were about 35 watches, some ladies' rings, some pistols, and around $600 in notes and coin. Loot from the passengers of the Katy Flyer. While searching over the ground where the bandits had made their fight, Labeef turned up some copper cartridge cases. He showed them to Rooster. I said, what are they? Rooster said,
this one is a .44 rimfire from a Henry rifle.
Thus, we had another clue.
But we did not have Cheney. We had not even set eyes on him to know it.
We took a hasty breakfast of the Indian hominy dish and departed the place. It was only an hour's ride to the Texas road. We made quite a caravan. If you had chanced to be riding up the Texas road on that bright December morning, you would have met 2 red-eyed peace officers and a sleepy youth from near Dardanelle, Arkansas, riding south at a walk and leading 7 horses. Had you looked closely, you would have seen that 4 of those horses were draped over with the corpses of armed robbers and stock thieves. We did, in fact, meet several travelers, and they marveled and wondered at our grisly cargo. Some of them had already heard news of the train robbery. One man, an Indian, told us that the robbers had realized $17,000 in cash from the express car. 2 men and a buggy told us their information put the figure at $70,000. A great difference. The accounts did agree roughly on the circumstances of the robbery. Here is what happened. The bandits broke the switch lock at Wagoner's Switch and forced the train onto a cattle siding. There, they took the engineer and the fireman as hostages and threatened to kill them if the express clerk did not open the doors of his car. The clerk had spunk and refused to open the doors. The robbers killed the fireman, but the clerk still held fast. The robbers then blasted the door open with dynamite, and the clerk was killed in the explosion. More dynamite was used to open the safe. While this was going on, 2 bandits were walking through the coaches with cocked revolvers, gathering up booty from the passengers. One man in a sleeping car protested the outrage and was assaulted and cut on the head with a pistol barrel. He was the only one they bothered except for the fireman and the express clerk. The bandits wore their hats low and had handkerchiefs tied over their faces, but Lucky Ned Pepper was recognized by way of his small size and commanding manner. None of the others was identified. And that is how they robbed the Katy Flyer at Wagner's Switch. The riding was easy on the Texas road. It was broad and had a good packed surface, as Rooster had described it. The sun was out, and the snow melted fast under the warm and welcome rays of Old Sol. As we rode along, Labeef commenced whistling tunes, perhaps to take his mind off his sore arm. Rooster said, "God damn a man that whistles." It was the wrong thing to say if he wished it to stop. Labeef then had to keep it up to show that he cared little for Rooster's opinion. After a while, he took a jew's harp from his pocket. He began to thump and twang upon it. He played fiddle tunes. He would announce, "Soldier's Joy," and play that. Then, "Johnny in the Low Ground," and play that. Then, "The 8th of January," and play that. They all sounded pretty much like the same song. Labeef said, "Is there anything you would particularly like to hear, Cogburn?" He was trying to get his goat. Rooster gave no answer. Labeef then played a few minstrel tunes and put the peculiar instrument away. In a few minutes, he asked Rooster this question, indicating the big revolvers in the saddle scabbards. "Did you carry those in the war?" Rooster said, "I have had them a good long time." Labeef said, "I suppose you were with the cavalry." Rooster said, "I forget just what they called it." "I wanted to be cavalryman," said Labeef, "but I was too young and didn't own a horse. I have always regretted it. I went in the army on my 15th birthday and saw the last 6 months of the war. My mother cried because my brothers had not been home in 3 years. They were off at the first tap of a drum. The army put me in the supply department, and I counted beeves and sacked oats for General Kirby Smith at Shreveport. It was no work for a soldier. I wanted to get out of the Trans-Mississippi Department and go east. I wanted to see some real fighting. Right toward the last, I got an opportunity to travel up there with a commissary officer, Major Burks, who was being transferred to the Department of Virginia. There were 25 in our party, and we got there in time for Five Forks in Petersburg, and then it was all over. I have always regretted that I did not get to ride with Stewart or Forrest or some of the others, Shelby and Early." Rooster said nothing. I said, "It looks like 6 months would be enough for you." Labeef said, "No, it sounds boastful and foolish, but it was not. I was almost sick when I heard of the surrender." I said, "My father said he sure was glad to get home. He nearly died on the way." Labeef then said to Rooster, "It is hard to believe a man cannot remember where he served in the war. Do you not even remember your regiment?" Rooster said, "I think they called it the bullet department. I was in it 4 years." "You do not think much of me, do you, Cogburn?"
"I don't think about you at all when your mouth is closed."
"You're making a mistake about me."
"I don't like this kind of talk. It is like women talking."
"I was told in Fort Smith that you rode with Quantrill in that border gang." Rooster made no reply. Labeef said, "I have heard they were not soldiers at all, but murdering thieves."
Rooster said, "I have heard the same thing."
"I heard they murdered women and children at Lawrence, Kansas."
"I have heard that, too. It is a damned lie. What side was you on?"
"I was in the Army of Northern Virginia, Cogburn, and I don't have to hang my head when I say it. Now, make another joke about it. You were only trying to put on a show for this girl, Mattie, with what you must think is a keen tongue."
"This is like women talking."
"Yes, that is the way. Make me out foolish in this girl's eyes."
"I think she has got you pretty well figured."
"You are making a mistake about me, Cogburn, and I do not appreciate the way you make conversation."
"That is nothing for you to worry about. That, nor Captain Quantrill either."
"Captain Quantrill?"
"You had best let this go, Labeef."
"Captain of what?"
"If you are looking for a fight, I will accommodate you. If you are not, you will let this alone."
"Captain Quantrill, indeed." I rode up between them and said, "I have been thinking about something. Listen to this. There were 6 bandits and 2 stack thieves, and yet only 6 horses at the dugout. What is the answer to that?"
Rooster said, "6 horses was all they needed."
I said, "Yes, but that 6 includes the horses belonging to Moon and Quincy. There were only 4 stolen horses."
Rooster said, "They would have taken them other 2 as well and exchanged them later. They'd done it before."
Then what would Moon and Quincy do for mounts?